In our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition, we'll visit the Pink Grizzly Fireworks Stand. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheib.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. A dozen medical students took the next step in their careers this week as they went through their white coat ceremony.
The professional fireworks shows will begin in a few hours, but chances are, for better or worse, according to your comfort level with the pyrotechnics, the backyard shows are already well underway. MTPR's Christopher Allen visited a popular Missoula area fireworks stand to bring us this story.
The July summer sun is beating down on the Pink Grizzly fireworks stand, and like clockwork, patrons are lining up.
Hello there.
How are you doing?
It's the only fireworks stand in the Missoula city limits. And the media shows up every year, too, almost out of obligation. The stand is a 44-year-old Klaus family institution here in Missoula. They originally bought this small patch of land off Russell Street in 1955, right next to their commercial greenhouse. And since the city designated this block of land as agricultural, it's not technically in the city limits, which means, even though it's illegal to sell fireworks in Missoula, the Klaus family can sell all the fireworks they want.
The first time I worked was when I was 18. So.
That's Lynn. She's a member of the Klaus family clan. Her father started the Pink Grizzly Fireworks Stand in 1970, and now she has grandkids of her own.
That's kind of how it's been, generation to generation. Not just with our family, but with the community.
With her smile and her pink Montana Grizzlies hat on, you can see it's all about the kids for Lynn.
There's black snakes and chickens.
Oh, the black snakes!
The Missoula City Council started asking police to crack down on the fireworks ban last year, and they listened. Police issued almost 30 tickets and over 100 warnings, but it isn't hurting the Pink Grizzly so far.
No, I've noticed it's been a little bit busier.
With the 4th of July holiday falling on a Friday this year, Danelle Klaus is expecting to get slammed, but it's good for business. Jamie Torres and Tanner Thompson stopped by to fill a sack full of fireworks, including something called a screaming hen.
Which, you know, you light in, it scoots across the ground, it screams.
They're taking their loot to their cabin near East Fork, Montana.
And we're all adults this year, so no kids, so we're going to go blow some stuff up.
Becky and her 7-year-old brother Timmy are from out of town.
You like that?
Yeah.
Timmy's love of rockets meant they had to stop and take a look.
Yeah, especially I like missiles, like the army missiles. They tried to build one of those out of cardboard and duct tape.
The fireworks and the kids. The Pink Grizzly has stayed pretty much the same over the years, except that one year when somebody accidentally drove into part of the sign that Lynn made years ago. But maybe it's for the best. After all, its nickname was the Pink Pig.
It's a good thing I became a banker instead of an artist.
For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Christopher Allen.
A dozen medical school graduates took the next step in their career. They're beginning their residency at Billings Clinic. The inaugural white coat ceremony was held this week for those accepted into the new internal medicine residency program. As Jackie Yamanaka reports, this ritual signals formal admission into their new role, physician.
This is kind of the culmination of the last decade of me studying and working really hard to get to this point, so I'm just thrilled. Having my name called and getting the long white coat, it's an incredible experience. I'm almost speechless because it's just a fulfillment of everything I've worked for up to this point. It's been great.
Dr. Cindy Bivington plans to practice internal medicine. She says that decision was reached while working at a small community hospital in rural Idaho.
And that's what kind of drove me through medical school and kind of directed my path. And when I came to Billings Clinic for interviewing, they stressed that that's what they're looking for, is the rural doctor that wants to go out and be part of the community. And that's exactly what I was looking for.
It's very exciting to be part of training young physicians. We believe some of them will stay in the area, and there's a real shortage of internal medicine physicians in this area.
Nicholas Walter is a physician and the CEO of Billings Clinic. He helped each resident don their white coat. Bivington is an Idaho native, but she says she and her husband and their 3 children have relocated to Billings and would like to remain after she completes her 3-year residency. According to statistics from the Montana Primary Care Office, there are 9 counties without any physician, and a dozen Montana counties are without a primary care doctor. Walter hopes to turn that around with this internal medicine residency program.
Some people have said, well, would a residency in Billings, Montana be attractive? And I think back to what do you think it was like in Rochester, Minnesota back about 1900 when people didn't really think Mayo was what it has become since then. And I think that's the journey we're on here today.
And the program's director, Dr. Roger Bush, says these residents will soon join other physicians who are committed to taking care of people, regardless of their background, ability to pay, or whether or not they have the skills to care for them.
It's accepting that responsibility and then finding the help to take care of them. That's a social justice purpose that Billings Clinic has, and it's a wonderful venue to train physicians who accept what can be an onerous responsibility, but to rise to the occasion to treat suffering wherever it arises.
Bush says these residents will join the team of providers, and this includes the Mayo Clinic Care Network, that have embraced that strong sense of purpose. Of the dozen new doctors to join the Billings Clinic, eight are in the three-year internal medicine residency. The remainder will serve 1 year and then move on to complete their residencies in their specialties. Jackie Yamanaka, YPR News.
The forecast for our listening area calls for clear skies throughout the night and temperatures in the 80s and 90s through the weekend. Lows will dip into the 50s. You can expect some clouds, but for the most part, there'll be clear skies for the next few days. And now for the editorial comments of Sarah Howell.
This week may be ending with a bang, and it started with some real fireworks as well, when the Supreme Court handed down two decisions on Monday, the last day of their spring term. These decisions, including one affecting contraception coverage in employer-sponsored health insurance, have deep implications for our country. Today, on Independence Day, it feels like an opportune time to stop and consider the arguments being made in the name of freedom. Consider, for instance, the Hobby Lobby case. The Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that family-owned corporations, like Hobby Lobby, would no longer be required to pay for insurance coverage for contraception under the Affordable Care Act if they had religious objections to this provision. This is a disappointing ruling that will prevent some women, especially those working hourly wage jobs and struggling to make ends meet, from getting birth control. Instead, this ruling gives some employers the right to allow their religious beliefs to trump the health needs and autonomy of their employees. Now, 5 minutes on the internet will provide you with many conflicting and confusing points of view on this decision. It's true that this ruling does not strike down the Affordable Care Act's birth control benefit. Today, more than 30 million women are eligible for birth control with no copay, thanks to this benefit, and the vast majority of them will not be affected by this ruling. But to those who are affected, this ruling will have real consequences. It is not hyperbole to say that losing insurance coverage for some of the most popular, easy-to-use, and expensive types of birth control available will have a concrete and negative impact on the lives of low-income women. The typical American woman who wants to have two kids will spend 30 years, or three-quarters of her reproductive life, seeking to avoid unintended pregnancy. Women choose among available contraception based on a range and combination of factors, including life circumstances, health needs, economic resources, and religious and other beliefs. Cost concerns, in particular, often drive women away from a preferred method to less effective but cheaper methods of birth control. Almost one-third of women report that they would change their choice of contraceptive method if cost were not a factor. That's tens of millions of women. Take, for example, hormonal IUDs, one quite expensive type of contraception objected to by the owners of Hobby Lobby. They can be 45 times more effective than oral contraceptives and 90 times more effective than condoms in preventing pregnancy. This means that for a woman affected by the court's ruling, her boss's religious beliefs will, at least for a time, be on that list of contributing factors that determine her choice of contraception. Furthermore, this ruling could have a much wider impact than we expect. Here, I find it useful to quote directly from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's dissent. Quote, "Would the exemption extend to employers with religiously grounded objections to blood transfusions, antidepressants, medications derived from pigs, including anesthesia, intravenous fluids, and pills coated with gelatin, and vaccinations? Approving some religious claims while deeming others unworthy of accommodation could be perceived as favoring one religion over another, the very risk the Constitution's Establishment Clause was designed to preclude. The court, I fear, has ventured into a minefield." End quote. Well, says your argumentative uncle at the 4th of July picnic, this doesn't mean women can't get access to those types of contraception. It just means the employer doesn't want to pay for them. And this is technically correct. But it behooves us to remember, especially today as we celebrate independence from tyranny, that when we opt for a system in which most Americans receive health coverage through their employers, we must not allow those employers to dictate the terms of our access to health care. This ruling is a bitter pill to swallow, but we will continue to fight for what is right, for affordable birth control and people's autonomy over their health care decisions. I'm Sarah Howell with Montana Women Vote. Thanks for listening. Happy Independence Day, and have a terrific weekend.
Sarah Howell is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and have a great Independence Day weekend.